Welcome to Mustard Aonings. I'm Matt.
I'm Richard.
And we're back.
Absolutely. After a 2 to 3 week absence.
No, it was, well, we did the one on a Tuesday.
Oh, yeah.
And then we missed last week because I was at my sister's wedding in Ohio.
That's right.
Who, my sister, by the way, is not fourth best prostitute all of Kazakhstan.
I cannot wait for that movie. They had an interview. I don't know if you saw it, but I sent you an interview. They interviewed him in Borat in Entertainment Weekly.
No, I missed that.
Even in print. It's hilarious. The guy, there's nothing funnier than that dude. I cannot wait.
That's awesome. Oh, anyway, and then I felt like crap after getting back from Ohio. And anyway, here we are. Lots of stuff to talk about. I got a long list.
Let's run through
it. This could be a long episode. We'll see. So on the flight down, I got Over the Hedge.
Oh, really? I thought that just came out.
Whatever. It's apparently in the correct window to see it on an airplane.
Is that as bad as it looks, or is
it
okay?
No, it sits there. It doesn't stink. It wasn't that great.
I swear, even the best movies, and I've never really seen a really good movie on a plane, but I so completely cannot get into them. Because it's the sound mix, the confusion.
Yeah, but on the other hand, something like Over the Hedge, I was fine with that presentation. Yeah. Edited, fine. Not widescreen, whatever.
Cool.
Listening to it through, you know, earphones and somehow you're only hearing the right side, whatever. Cool. Don't care. It was okay. There was one moment that made me kind of chuckle out loud.
What's that?
And it wasn't even a joke that was original. Basically, it's... the Steve Carell squirrel character who's already hyper ends up drinking an energy drink and is therefore super hyper.
Yeah.
And the conceit of the shot is that everyone else is in extreme slow motion as he's walking around and doing things. And it's like, they did that in Futurama once with Fry as he was trying to drink 100 cups of coffee.
Yeah. I remember. I do remember that he almost goes into the Zen like state.
Yes. And they pretty much did the same joke for Over the Hedge. Anyway, it was an okay movie. It didn't stink. If you have kids, it's, you know, and the thing with kids is they like to watch these movies over and over and over. And, you know, it's perfectly fine for that. And then on the way back had Mission Impossible 3.
Oh, yeah. I still haven't seen that.
Really?
Yeah. Still just, I'm so friggin' busy. All these movies we talk about. And then I just need to find the opportunity. And after like the 2 weeks, I suddenly lose all interest and know I'm going to watch on DVD. But that was a movie I was like totally jonesing to see and I never saw it.
Borderline didn't want to watch it because I know the DVD probably isn't too far out.
Yeah.
But I did watch it and it was fine. It was fun to see again.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it a little more the second time, even though it wasn't in a real, you know, thundering theater environment. All right. So Miami Vice.
Oh, yeah. I went to go see Miami Vice last night.
That's right. I guess you haven't seen it.
But no, feel free to talk about it. I heard it was great. We went to go see it, and we were 20 minutes too late.
Do you not look up the time
beforehand? We did, but I don't want to go into the details. But somebody looked up the time for a different theater.
Oh.
So we end up going, World Trade Center starting. Let's go check that out. Maybe Oliver Stone's delivering a good movie. And we go in, and honest to God, it's the first time I can ever remember my entire life I've walked out of a movie because it was so bad. And this movie was terrible. It was so poorly written. I mean, it was like, it felt
check
like...
Check your mic, dude. You're...
No, it's like, it seems like it's totally on.
Okay. You're holding it about a... foot lower than
I'm trying to. I don't know. We're really hot here, so I'm trying to. Like, I'm picking up a lot of yours on mine. So, anyway, we digress. But it was so. The writing was like, it felt like one of those 70s disaster movies, like The Towering Inferno, with the big emotions and the big flowery speeches, and it just was bizarre. Especially in a similar vein, the other movie, obviously, you compare it to is Flight or United 93, and that movie did everything right by just treating it almost like documentary like. And this movie, people would stop they're like something is happening to them and they would stop and make a speech for the ages kind of thing.
It was just stupid.
Yeah, it was like
interesting.
Wow, I was just stunned by how much I wasn't getting involved with it. And at a certain point when a movie's really bad, every new thing that comes up further adds that. So I wasn't sure if it was just me and my buddy in there. We hadn't talked, hadn't said a thing. And an hour into the movie, I look over at him. He looks at me and he says, you want to take off? And I go, Yeah, pretty much. Well, we stuck it out for another 15, 20 minutes and we left. So I got to think and I started to realize, man, I can't think of any Oliver Stone movie I liked. I remember loving Platoon when it came out, thinking this is like, oh, Vietnam, cool. And I saw it on TV the other day again, and oh man, that thing does not hold up well. It's like Willem Dafoe as the Christ figure and all this other overtly, you know, mythological stuff that just does not wear well to me. And I started to realize, wow, I can't think of anything. I sort of liked Any Given Sunday, but it was like big and blusterous, but I don't know. I hate the guy. And this movie made it evident why I can't stand him as a director.
I liked JFK when it came out. And
yeah, I take it back. I love JFK. And I hate the politics of it. I think it's so stupid, but I love that movie. I totally take it back. I forgot. I loved JFK.
I do like Any Given Sunday. A lot of people don't, but I do. With the notable exception of the some of the uniforms they came up with, fake teams,
were
horrible. That Mike Ditka team with they're like the Crusaders. It was olive green with the red cross.
What they were thinking of, it was just
apparently they had the license to use the NFL teams, but he took so long in pre-production that the NFL withdrew their permission. God. So they had to come up with this.
Terrible.
Yeah, anyway.
So you saw Miami Vice, though.
I did.
What'd you think?
I liked it. I didn't think it was as good as Heat or Collateral. But that's
a pretty high standard.
Yeah, but I did like it. I really liked Colin Farrell.
Yeah,
I mean, I've heard some reviews where he's like being too minimalist, but I think he, I really really liked his performance. I mean, Jamie Foxx was good too. Although now it's getting harder and harder to watch a Jamie Foxx performance without thinking about all these stories about him being a prima donna and he's got this huge posse and he's like, I've got an Oscar, kiss my butt.
Yeah.
But, you know, good performance from him as well.
What about Gong Lee?
I couldn't figure out why would they cast someone who could barely speak English?
I know, and I was looking at the sign and the big stand up sign in the theater, and it was like Colin Farrell, Jamie Foxx, Gong Lee, and I'm going, now I've heard of her and I've seen her in a couple movies from China. But either she must be a huge international star, or they're, I'm not sure what they were doing or trying to get the woman's audience.
She was acceptable as an actress.
Yeah.
The accent was a little rough to perceive sometimes to get through. But you're sitting there wondering, well, why deal with that at all? Why not just get someone who can speak English?
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, one thing though, I couldn't figure out where all the money went.
Really?
$130 million, some god-awful huge number. Yeah. And I know that they had trouble with the high-def cameras because in the sea environment and salt, and they kept breaking down. And they went to, you know, the Dominican Republic. They went to all these exotic, they went to like two exotic locations. And they've got, you know, a Ferrari in there. They've got these cigarette boats, which apparently are now called go-fast boats. And despite all of that, it didn't seem like $130 million was up on screen. It was...
Yeah.
I'd be curious to see how the budget breakdown for that went. But, you know, I liked the movie. I would recommend for people who are interested in it, I think they would like it.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely looking forward to seeing. Did you see that? Did I send you that link about that idiot who was talking about the true costs of the Pirates sequels movies? And in the space of a paragraph, they were quoting it as like, well, no, they were quoting it in Movie City News and others that some industry experts are saying the true cost of these movies is $300 million a piece. And this guy, in reading it, he just literally pulled the facts out of thin air and actually added them up to $700 million
for the two movies. Which is somewhat ironic, because I've seen you pull numbers out of your ass.
Hey, but I'm a nobody. This guy is one. This is one guy everybody's quoting, and he says, oh, well, this person said this, and this person said this, and actually, they're not done filming, so this... And it's like, well, wait a second. How do you know that first person isn't factoring in all of the budgets?
I haven't read the article. I saw...
Well, it seemed extraordinary to me to basically claim that two movies each are costing $350 million, which is so far beyond the realm of crazy.
I don't know that, but they're filming with water.
Hey, I know they are
tremendously expensive, and they're using lots of CGI. They're just,
the guy went from in his paragraph, he went from the two movies costing $250 million to literally adding the gross domestic product of several countries into it. So it just seemed crazy to me.
Okay. I will say, independent of that article, I I used to read that guy's website.
Yeah.
It's jimhillmedia.com.
Yeah, he loves Disney.
It's funny because apparently there's this whole Disney culture that's just hardcore websites and everything Disney.
Yeah.
But he's actually had some really good articles and stuff about the history of various aspects of the park.
Yeah.
And how far are we into it that you've started screwing around with your cats?
10 minutes, 26 All right. seconds.
Mark that down. So there's like stories about, you know, how Splash Mountain came to be, and it was part of a series of ride things that they had dummied up in the labs when Michael Eisner came by, and I guess his teenage son really reacted well to Splash Mountain, and that's how it got the green light. I think that's presented as that's the prevailing theory. There's no corroboration.
What, they don't like Splash Mountain, or? Or they're just saying it was because it was...
It was because Michael Eisner's son reacted well to it. And, put, you know, what's that? And that's why Splash Mountain got built. Now, they don't say that
Splash
that's...
Mountain.
It's a good ride.
Well, we went there, and it was... And we went there, and my brother and I were there about 2 weeks before it opened.
Oh.
There was nothing more depressing than seeing this beautiful ride that wasn't going to open.
Anyway, so there's a ton of stuff like that, which is actually pretty well done.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of his actually doing news reporting, I didn't read too much of that, so yeah. I can't comment on that. Okay, so
what else on the list?
You sent me something. You were bitching about the Emmys again.
Oh my God! Did you hear? Okay, so the Emmys this year, everybody was like dumbfounded and by the nominees
because they changed the process
exactly,
and by virtue of that, you get things like where I'm college educated. I just said that.
College edumacated, I believe, is the
you
term.
Get thing you get instances where. You know, Hugh Laurie nominated for Best Actor in House, but the series wasn't nominated for Best Drama, vice versa.
Well, and other big things like
Lost,
the winners of last year not even getting nominated. Edie Falco, not to say that, hey, they get nominated every year, Edie Falco and James Gandolfini, but yeah, they were incredibly good. I mean, where are these nominees? But the biggest one is, and it took somebody 3 weeks to figure it out, but... Ellen Burstyn got nominated for this movie about the Herman Tarnauer Gene, I can't remember the name, but anyway, it was the Scarsdale murder. This late, I think it was the one where she apparently murdered her husband or her lover or something like that. Anyway, they nominated Ellen Burstyn. It took somebody all of 3 weeks to realize that Ellen Burstyn was in that show for 14 seconds. Literally, apparently it's two like 7 second clips. That's the extent of her performance, and she got nominated. Which and the Emmy people are like kind of little defensive, doing this and that. And if I were them, I'd be saying, you know what, our system is desperately broken. If anything like this could ever slip through, it just sends a fallacy. It just shows how baloney everything is. Anyway, 14 seconds. So you know they used to always talk about. Who was the actor?
Judi Dench.
Well, no, I was talking about in the Oscars, the famous short.
Judi Dench.
Well, I know there's Judi Dench, but you got to give me a second. Where I was about to talk about Anthony Hopkins, who won Best Actor, and he was only in Silence of the Lambs for about, I think, 14 minutes or 15 minutes. And but he makes such an incredible impression that you think it's much, much longer. Well, I don't care how much of an impression Ellen Burstyn made. 14 seconds was not much of an impression. Clearly, they
nominated Chris. I've never heard anyone talk about the length of Anthony Hopkins' performance in Silence of the Lambs.
It's famously the shortest Best Actor, the shortest female Best Actress was the lady who played Nurse Ratched in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Louise Fletcher. Because she was in it for like 50 or 20 minutes, and she was one Best Actress. And Anthony Hopkins was in Silence of the Lambs for 3 scenes for a total of like 15 minutes.
Okay, well, Richard says famously, but since I haven't heard of that, take that for what it's worth.
Okay, well, you can all do your little IMDb searches out there, all you listener of ours, and determine whether I'm correct or not.
You wanted to talk about MTV's 25th anniversary.
Well, did you notice that first of all, there was actually a lot of coverage, and it was so clear none of it was emanating from MTV. It was as if MTV made a corporate decision that, and it seemed pretty clear reading between the lines, we don't really want to publicize this. We're sort of in a transitional phase, and we're doing something else, and we actually don't want to remind ourselves of our roots as the VJ channel and everything, yet all of the media wanted to do stories about it, so they took it upon themselves to do it on their own. And what was interesting is a couple of them, like on NPR, they actually got a hold of the head of MTV, and she just seemed really annoyed by to have to talk about the history of the organization, because she, but not so annoyed that they wanted to say, well, we're pointedly not trying to talk about it. But I've never seen anything like that. Usually when an organization has a big anniversary, they pump it up and try and pitch it to places. But here it was weird that MTV missed their own boat on the desire of people to cover it, because it was covered huge.
I don't even know what MTV does anymore.
I don't either.
I mean, they've got TRL, which apparently is the only place they actually play videos anymore. And maybe that's gone
and
by
barely
the
there. Well, they create MTV2 to create videos, and now there's no videos on MTV2. But people forget there's like 8 different other MTVs out
there's
there
like,
that play videos.
I mean, they play like Cribs and...
I don't know. Is that even on? That was like 10 years or 5 years ago.
I don't know. Like I don't...
Wonder Shows and is on MTV2. I watched that.
Well, it's just like, you know, people talk about MTV, and it's like, I couldn't explain what they do now. I couldn't explain how they make money, who's watching it, what their relevance is.
Which may, in fact, be the reason why the people at MTV were reluctant to do it, because
usually,
would harken back to a time when they were very well-defined. And what was interesting is almost every report went into great lengths to talk about the impact of the real world in terms of on the cultural landscape as a precursor to all of the modern reality shows, which is to create...
I only watched one season of that, and it was a season where they were in Seattle because they worked at a radio station.
Yep. Well, what station did they work at?
They worked at the End.
Oh, okay. So did you ever see them around the...
No, because their tenure was up right before I started interning at a sister station that was like the next floor up.
Huh. Oh, that's right. They were the...
Although, one of my boss, when I was an intern there, had apparently hung out with those guys a couple of times, and I remember one incident where there was like almost a fight in a bar or something, and my boss said he was trying to egg the guy on at the bar and get something started. And
did you know that they had approached?
Yes.
Pause.
Yes.
But it was pretty clearly that would be a major mistake.
All right.
That's the last thing they would want to have is fights at a wildlife center. So, but anyway, the I never watched any of it, but they were pointing out that it was a huge cultural precursor to all this other stuff, and again, MTV clearly did not want to have anything to do with it. I found that interesting.
I agree. Mel Gibson has had a bit of a dust up.
Jesus,
what a wow! I mean, everybody.
I almost feel sorry for him because it's Titanic. The reaction,
you know, and it really forces you to address. Do you separate the actor from his opinions? Do you separate Braveheart being a pretty good movie, a great movie, versus the fact he clearly hates Jewish people?
You know what? I always am able to do that until you used to tell me, oh, I don't want to see Passion of the Christ. And I'm like always, you know, I
don't want to see Passion of the Christ because I don't. But the South Park view, it's a snuff film.
Yeah.
I don't want to see a 2-hour snuff film.
Well, from the standpoint of people sit here and talk about Tom Cruise and how nuts he is, and the dude is off the wall nuts, but I could care less. I enjoy his movies.
That's true.
But now with this, it's just gone too far of the deep end. I'm really kind of physically repulsed by it. When I think about his, I've never had any tolerance of people that when they feel loose and comfortable, they're just awful people. And it really sounds like Mel Gibson, when he's drunk, this stuff was coming out. I mean, it's pretty clear. This has always been under service. And I go back and I look and I think of him filming horrible movies like Bird on the Wire.
I saw on a plane.
And I'm thinking about that. And I'm thinking, even while he's doing that 20 years ago, he's probably sitting here thinking about the Jews running Hollywood and the Jews starting wars. And thinking, God, even back then he was, I don't know. It literally has changed my thinking about the guy.
Yeah, it's... And a lot of people talk, you know, how does this affect Apocalypto opening? Will people associate his views with this movie that he's not even in?
Well, as they pointed out, though, that's the problem with the movie. Nobody's in it that anybody's recognized, so it's entirely being sold.
But a lot of critics were looking forward to it and were saying this is something new and innovative, and it might have a shot at some Oscars. And now everyone, too bad for that.
Well, I agree, but in terms of selling it, there was no way to sell it other than put Mel Gibson on the circuit.
Yeah,
to talk
I agree.
About it.
Selling it would be kind of rough.
Yeah. But I still kind of am looking forward to seeing it. You know, it looked intriguing. Although it could be, you know, they didn't. The only movie I can think of similar to like that would be, well, two movies. Clan of the Cave Bear, which was never saw it. Well, it was, you know, there was no talk in it. It was all these cavemen stuff. And then the other one was Rapa Nui, which actually had somewhat stars in it, like the guy who was in that Bruce Lee movie. But that was the movie about Easter Island stuff. But again, not speaking a language we understand, all that sort of stuff. So I don't know. I'm still kind of looking forward. I went to Chichen Itza a couple years ago and saw, you know, the tourist version of all the Mayan stuff. And I'm thinking, wow. I mean, just looking at those buildings and those things, it's so foreign that if somebody can illuminate that to me, I'd be interested. Anyway.
Next on the list. And so far, this is a lot of Richard stuff. Paul Verhoeven.
Oh, yeah. Did you see the trailer for that thing?
I know.
Okay, so Verhoeven has a new movie out. It's a Dutch World War II movie. And it's the first Dutch movie he's done in 25 years. He's a famous Dutch director. And I, you know, before RoboCop, before Basic Instinct, uh-huh. all that other crap. And first of all, I noticed that, wow, in European trailers, they show nudity, which was kind of surprising.
Oh, I didn't. Okay, I'll watch it now.
And the second thing is it looked like a total return to Paul Verhoeven movies, which is the acting seems weird and forced and over stilted in this way that is so bizarre, but I kind of get into. So I'm looking forward to it, but it was weird to see. I'm wondering if Verhoeven, you know, he hasn't done a movie, I think, since Hollow Man, and I'm wondering if he just isn't getting hired in Hollywood or he's decided to go back there, because his big famous turning movie in Europe was this movie called Soldier of Orange, and it was a World War II movie that Steven Spielberg would famously say, it's the best World War II movie ever. It was brilliant. And I remember watching it a couple of years ago and going, God, this is a piece of crap, especially to Steven Spielberg, Saving Private Ryan and stuff. That said, I love it. And either way, the thing I'm most looking forward to is the movie coming out on DVD so I can hear another Paul Verhoeven commentary track, because his commentary tracks are uniformly brilliant and entertaining.
Cool.
So
you wanted to talk about the Apocalypse Now super special DVD.
Oh, did you see that? Did you see the announcement for that?
I think so, but it's still missing that thing you want.
Yeah, what thing? What was the the documentary, Hearts of Darkness. Yeah, they did this documentary that's brilliant where they took all the old footage of Coppola's wife, yeah, where she filmed it all, and they put it in this, and they made this incredible documentary. I think it's the best documentary about filmmaking ever. And according to George Hickenlooper, the director of it, he was writing in Jeffrey Wells's talkback section. He says, uh-huh, yeah, I've been trying to persuade, you know, Coppola to do it, but he thinks he looks like a maniac. And I'm thinking, yeah, exactly. He totally looks like a maniac. And it's brilliant. It's incredible. So, but they do have both the original version and his Redux version, his edited version. And he's got commentaries on both of them. And they have a bunch of other cutout scenes. So that Redux version still had stuff they had left off. So it's like, it's
and now it's 9 hours long.
It's like an Apocalypse Now cornucopia. And then to me, that's probably my second favorite movie of all time. So I'm very much looking forward to it. And I was really disappointed when they put Redux out on video. No commentary. Well, now they've delivered. I'm happy.
You also wanted to talk about The Office. I think you had seen all of my iTunes or something.
I put them all on iTunes and watched them down when I was on vacation, uh-huh, in rapid succession. And, you know, it's funny, last year when they had their first 6-episode season and the scripts were all basically the British episodes, it was really hard for me to get into. Mm-hmm. And because I honestly didn't, I was so used to the British one that it threw me. Well, now that the new season's come on and they're writing them themselves and it's new stuff, I just think it's incredibly funny. A well done show. I loved that show on almost every level.
So. Yeah, no, it is. Yeah, no.
Just super well done.
Very well done. I enjoy it. Very funny. Very funny.
So what's on your list, dude?
He was the... Oh, crap.
Carell?
Yeah, Carell's character was in New York for his corporate meeting. And he's walking around New York Times Square. I love New York. It's my favorite place. And I'm going to go get an authentic slice. And he walks into a Sbarro's.
He goes, my favorite New York pizza eatery. And it's Sbarro.
I thought that was so funny. Okay, God. But I don't want to get into what was funny every scene.
Well, that show, there was some stuff. You know what's funny about it is it's great, but it's not as cringe-inducing as the original series.
It isn't.
And to some extent, I like that. I love the cringe-inducing stuff, but I'd actually have to take a week to get through an episode on the first one because I'd be pausing it. It was so painful. This one here, it's not as much, but it's, I think, in some ways more observant of people and what's going on in their thoughts. So anyway.
Do you see that Heath Ledger is cast as the Joker?
Yeah.
The next Batman
Why is
movie?
That a big deal for people?
I don't know. I think it would
he's
be
He's a
fine.
Good actor, man.
I mean, it's, and you know, he's an actor. Let him act.
Yeah.
And clearly they did such a good job with the first one. Fine. The same teams involved with the second one. Let them do what they want to do. I trust them completely. And you know, I think it'll work.
I used to think of him. I still haven't seen Brokeback Mountain. Now that I have it on video, I can watch it in the comfort of my house and people won't think of me as a that kind of person.
I will think of you.
I'm just joking, obviously. But he was in the Lords. Oh, actually, we're watching him right now on.
You're watching.
I'm watching him sort of on Brothers Grimm. But he was in that movie, The Lords of Dogtown, as kind of this older surf bum that makes surfboards. God, he's a good actor. I thought of him like everybody else, that pretty boy that was supposed to be the next big thing. He's a good actor. He's going to be great in Batman.
You had sent me something a while ago, Charlie Wilson's War.
Oh, have you heard about that?
Nope.
Well, it's this dude that went to
it's a Mike Nichols film apparently with Tom Hanks.
Yeah, it's Charlie Wilson is this, he was like this congressman from Texas that decides to effectively, he's worrying that Afghanistan is losing out to Russia. So he basically goes over on his own to Afghanistan. He's like a congressman and starts coming up with all kinds of deals to fund the Mujahideen and get them weapons and stuff. And boy, it's amazing how much of today's problems can be funded by, can be traced back to this super patriot idiot congressman who went to Afghanistan over there. Although the problem is, the interesting thing is apparently a bunch of people are pointing out that this book is very poorly sourced. It's basically sourced by a bunch of people who have a very vested interest in telling a story in a particular way. So it's hard to know how true it is, but Tom Hanks is putting it on. Should be good.
Interesting. Next on the list, Arrested Development is going to be broadcast or whatever presented on MSN.
Yeah.
Like all three seasons.
Yep. They've purchased the rights to them. Like
the internet rights.
Yeah.
Because the other, I think it was from the same story, commented that G4 had purchased the broadcast rights.
Oh, for TV, but not to show on the internet.
That's bizarre. And G4 used to be Tech TV.
Well, it used to be not
Tech TV, but what was that network? Were they before G4?
It was Game. I thought it was Tech TV.
Well, I thought Tech TV was a show on the network.
No, Tech TV was the network,
Okay, I never watched it. There's this whole cohort of people that watch
They used to have a Mac show on there. I used to watch all the time. But yeah, the G4, they're morphing into that.
And apparently, G4 sucks.
Well, they're trying to create a network with Edge, and they have no idea what they're doing.
Well,
they purchased
not.
The Man Show, and the one That's thing right. about them is that they're trying. At least I give them credit for really trying to market themselves aggressively in new ways.
Didn't Spike TV do the same?
Yes.
It seems like the exact same thing.
Exactly. They saw Spike TV and they go, we can do Spike TV and do it better. So let's build ourselves around a couple of shows. So one is The Man Show. But, you know, one thing they do is they have a bunch of G4 video podcasts they're pumping out. And, you know, different ways to try and get people to watch it. I honestly have no idea what channel it is, where it is or whatever.
Yeah,
I have
no interest.
Yeah.
But anyway,
but MSN, so MSN is like, you know, to compete with iTunes or whatever, they want to draw people
That'll
to
be
their
interesting.
Site.
And I would probably, and I don't know if it's going to be, you can go to the MSN whenever and download one of these or watch it.
My understanding is you can't watch it or download it. My understanding is it's like what
you,
they were doing.
Can you watch it whenever you want?
Yeah, that's my understanding. Is what they did is they did it like
ABC. It's up there,
ABC.
Definitely. That's awesome.
Well, they did it, you know, they did with ABC with Lost. Now, you probably have to sit through their commercials, but, you know, that's the deal. But if you're having to watch it in their stupid window and all this other stuff, it's
we'll
not
see.
Quite the same.
I've never tried, I haven't gone to any of the network sites to look at what their internet attempts are.
Yeah.
Although, again, MSN, Microsoft has thrown so much money at that division.
And what is it? Isn't
and
it
everything
like...
I've ever heard at is that it's the worst run division at Microsoft.
Really?
They have no vision, or the vision shifts every 6 months.
Well, isn't it? Isn't there some statistic that like 70% of searches within Microsoft are Google searches?
It's not that high, but it is fairly. It's really? Over. I think it's more like 50.
To their infinite credit at Microsoft, they don't have some dictum, you must use MSN.
Well, it's, you know.
I've heard dictums about Apple iPods and stuff, but I haven't heard that one, so.
Yeah, I don't. But you just MSN.
I know.
It's like they're not about to fold the division. They're not about to fire, you know, say, screw it, we're selling
it. Well, if it wasn't
goodbye.
Part of Microsoft, it would be a hot, cool, up-and-coming thing.
I don't know.
Well, but they do have a huge number.
It would
almost
be like one of those Paul Allen companies that he starts up, he throws a ton of money at, never makes any money on its own.
And then sells it for a certain rate
that
sounds. Yeah.
Anyway. Maybe this is the turning point, and they will be cool from now on.
Yeah, maybe.
Anyway, something that we haven't talked about, but clearly should, the Zune.
Ugh.
Microsoft's iPod killer.
Well, I haven't seen anything about it, but the stories I hear.
Well, apparently it's going to be out this fall. It's going to cost $300. It might not do video off the bat.
What?
I think I saw that.
Isn't that the point to the thing? Oh my God.
I don't know. It's on one hand, it's being done by the same division that did the Xbox. So the same Jay Allard, it's under his, I think, you know, Jay Allard and Robbie Bach. They're the two main executives in charge.
I've heard
of
the other guy. I've heard Jay Allard, obviously, but
and then I don't think Peter Moore, who's the other big Xbox guy. I don't think he has anything to do with it. But you know, they make a big deal about how it's coming from those guys, so it's going to be good. It's coming
That's
from the cool
part
of Microsoft.
That's pretty bad when the assumption is it's going to be bad until oh, but no, we got these guys. Okay, maybe we'll give it the benefit of the doubt.
Well, it's you know you hear stories about iPod killers, at least in the tech media, so to speak, like on CNET or Slashdot, all the time. You know, like how Toshiba's Gigabit is a superior product to I don't even know which version of the iPod, and yet it still hasn't penetrated. It still hasn't reached the cultural zeitgeist of an iPod, and probably nothing ever will.
Well, my feeling on that, having had an iPod, is, you know, it's funny. I sit there and think about, why can't it do this? Why can't it do that often? But for the most part, it does what it does. It has a very singular vision. It does it extremely well. And typically, I think of Microsoft products, or my assumption is, this thing's going to do a bunch of other things, but it's not going to feel integrated. It's going to feel clunky, and they're going to give, it's so funny. I love options on everything. And I don't understand why I love my iPod so much because I can't even adjust like the screen brightness or other stuff easily or anything like that. Because they limit what you can do. It's like, why can't the time clock just be at the top all the time? Why do I have to go find the thing or something? They limit it, but I appreciate that. So to some extent, I get the feeling Microsoft is going to screw it up by offering way too many options.
Well,
that's my assumption.
It's possible. I mean, you look at like the Gigabit, the Toshiba thing.
Yeah.
A lot of people complain about the interfaces of the other devices, from the Creative Rio or I can't even name the other iRiver, whatever. And so that has always been one of the biggest bugaboos. I don't like to even use that word, but and so that's been the main thing. Certainly the cultural aspect, although it's funny, if you listen to the Major Nelson podcast, it's the Xbox 360 podcast.
You can send me that link. I gotta sign up.
MajorNelson.com.
Is it okay?
It's it varies. Some of the ones I really like are the ones where he's talking about the HD DVD or HD or you know, the more technical aspects instead of let's talk about, you know, Madden for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
But it's funny because he works at Microsoft, so he's always talking about your portable device or your portable player or your MP3 player. He never uses the word iPod.
Yep.
And I'm, you know, it's because he works at Microsoft. It's funny. So funny to listen to that. And you're like, dude, just say iPod. It's okay. So Zune. And the other interesting thing about this, not that really we've been saying anything compelling or interesting for the past 5 minutes, but a lot of Microsoft has been a partner with the other people, like Toshiba and Samsung. And is Creative still in business, or did they just give up? One of the companies
They're still in business, but I thought they got bought out or something.
I don't know. One of the companies gave up, but they've been partnering. Microsoft is, you know, here's Place for Sure, which is the Windows Media, whatever. And now they're a competitor in another, you know, in another channel. And it'll be interesting to see how that works out. Will other companies just say, all right, we can't throw the money at this product that Microsoft can?
Yeah.
Because Microsoft can throw money at a money loser for a long time.
Yeah.
But, you know, we'll see if it works. Apparently, it'll have a Wi-Fi connection, so you can just download songs wherever you've got access to a Wi-Fi point.
I don't understand why iPod and them. They don't have Wi-Fi and Bluetooth built in.
I was like, damn, I wish I could do that. And then I saw I don't know if it was an official rebuttal, but somebody was saying, but your download speed over Wi-Fi is going to not be that great.
You know,
and it's going to be a battery hog.
That's not true, because let's put it this way. Every song I download on here, everything I do, I download through Wi-Fi, because my router on my computer is in another room and I don't have it hardwired up. And there, it's lightning fast. It's fast as anything. You know, it's certainly as fast as the connection coming to that router is. So,
but battery life.
Yeah, battery life's a problem. That's actually the major problem. You have to, for Wi-Fi, you'd want to only have it obviously on when you're working. The other one, and I'm sure this is the battery life issue is why, but I'm surprised they don't have Bluetooth headphones.
Yeah, that's been sort of a rumor, or why can't we have this for years?
Because think about all those articles you've seen, and there's even another one right now talking about how every kid out there gets their iPod ripped off, and you go to New York and anywhere you go, if you're seeing them, see those stupid, white headphones in your ear or, you know, going the string down there, they're stealing your iPods. People are always getting them. And if you had at least a Bluetooth, at least it would at least a little be hidden and they couldn't grab it.
My initial response to that is, use another pair of headphones.
Well, but it's not necessarily the white. People, the simple fact is 90% of the people that have an MP3 player, it's an iPod.
Yeah, but if it's in a pocket, it could be a Walkman. It could be a shitty radio.
It could be, but if...
I've got... Because I hardly ever use my iPod headphones, mainly because I don't want to get them dirty, but because the little foam covers lasted about a week.
I never used them once. I went and got these nice Sennheisers.
See, I've got a really old pair of black Sony earbuds.
Yeah.
And I also have a really old yellow fold-up from my sports Walkman Sony. And I figure if I use these really garish yellow headphones, and to me, I don't care about sound quality that much, because usually I'm listening to podcasts, and who cares how good the conversation sounds.
Dude,
I'm not on a subway.
You should borrow those Sennheisers I bought, because they're also the sound. They have that circuitry in it
to
the noise canceling thing, and the quality is stunningly good.
Honestly, though, I mainly use my iPod at work, and I've got another pair of headphones for that. And I prefer to hear what's going on in the room.
Yeah. Yeah, so, well, I can't handle the earbuds. They start to hurt the ones stuff in there. They just start to hurt after a while. I mean, I guess if I got the ones that you had preformed or whatever, but
okay,
yeah.
Madam.
Yeah, they just hurt. So
anyway, so we've done Zune.
I don't know. I just have to wait to see it. I mean, if it integrates in, you know, I look at my Pocket PC and I get all ticked off because it just seems like a half-formed product to me. Mm-hmm. And I look at it and go, God, this is the perfect platform for video, for things to work, but they simply don't necessarily do it.
Yeah,
if they somehow integrated some of that in there, I might be interested, but I'll just wait and see.
Yeah, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt and wait and see. And, you know, and And there's rumors that it might do something with, you know, Xbox 360.
Yeah.
Like, maybe this is a portable gaming device, too. Maybe it's not. It's got this Live Anywhere thing.
And I'll also tell you, I mean, I really have become this huge advocate of iTunes. And yeah. Apple has signed up exclusive rights to every friggin' channel. So I look at that and I go, well, if your player does not allow me on my trip to Oregon to watch The Office whenever I want, I'm sort of not interested in your player.
Yeah.
You know, that's where it is.
A while ago, you sent me the link about The Departed.
Which one was The Departed? Oh, yeah. God, did you see the trailer for that?
I saw the trailer. There's a ton of people in it.
I know. It's like all these huge stars. But if you didn't tell me it was a Scorsese movie.
It's like Leonardo DiCaprio, Matt Damon.
Yeah, well, and I think isn't like Harvey Keitel. And like it's like all the usual suspects. But it's like it's based on a Hong Kong movie that I actually have. That I didn't think was that good, but it's about a cop that was a guy that was in the mob that becomes a cop. And, you know, it's this kind of weird, confusing story, but he did an American version of it. But what was weird to me is looking at the trailer, my God, it doesn't look like a Martin Scorsese movie. It looks like a big action movie, except for the use of music. He's got great music in it. But it was interesting. I was thinking, God dang, Martin Scorsese has nobody in his movies, but Leonardo DiCaprio, 3 movies in a row. He's turning into the Robert De Niro of the year 2000s. So it look kind of cool. I don't know. I love Martin Scorsese movies, even ones that they say aren't that good. And he's trying. I liked him. I liked Gangs of New York. I didn't love it. I liked it. I really liked The Aviator.
I liked Gangs of New York.
He's not the Martin Scorsese of the 70s.
Bringing Out the Dead was. I saw that in the theater for some reason.
That was a harsh. Even he admits it didn't really work. So,
Black Dahlia trailer for that came out.
Oh yeah, did you see it?
Yeah.
What'd you think?
It wasn't that compelling a trailer.
Yeah.
I mean, and I, you know, if you're going for a certain vibe, like you're trying to capture the vibe of that time and express it through the trailer, I can understand how you're trying to do it a specific way. And Scarlett Johansson is, you know, yummy, but.
It made me feel queasy, the trailer, because I want that movie to be so great.
So it
on every level. Written by James Ellroy, the single greatest author, I believe, in the English language. Written Brian De Palma in his full Untouchables kind of mode, where it's a mainstream movie, but he's going to bring grandeur to it. But look at this trailer. It looked like a mess. Who are all these people? There's like Scarlett Johansson. There's Hilary Swank. There's who's the other chick in it? Mia Kirshner. It's like what? I mean, I know the story a little bit, but I don't know what this movie's about because it's a mess. You know, I'm hoping the movie was great because that trailer just stunk. And on some of the movie sites are going, oh, look at this. This looks awesome. I'm thinking, wow, I'm not sure what they're looking at because this on paper looks awesome. This trailer looked kind of like a mess. And I don't know what. I kind of like Josh Hartnett, but I don't find him to be a very good actor. And he always seems to me out of place when he's in a movie where he's supposed to have gravitas or something. He's got this deep voice that is his legitimate voice, but it sounds like he's trying to talk in a deep voice. Even though it actually is his voice, so I don't know. I hope it's good, but I have low expectations.
Do you see that the Chris Nolan is going to direct a version of The Prisoner?
No, really?
Yeah.
Oh, sweet.
Probably after the next Batman film, after Dark Knight. Yeah, that's going to be awesome. I haven't seen all of the original episodes of the. You know, the original series from the 60s, The Prisoner, but that was so innovative and so cool and so different and so out there.
It was, although whenever I think of it now, like so many things, when The Simpsons spoofs it, you're stuck with The Simpsons version of it. So I tend to think of The Simpsons and those little flowers and them, you know, and the balls.
The weather chasing. Ball. And
But yeah, oh man, I love The Prisoner when I was a kid. Because I remember you're just watching normal TV and then all of a sudden on some like independent channel, they're showing that in syndication. You're going, what? It's so different than anything you're used to. Yeah, it's sweet.
So I'm looking forward to that. Is Patrick McGowan still alive?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, obviously he would be in the movie if he was.
That would be so cool.
They had a trailer. I think you showed it to me before. They had a trailer last night for his in-between Batman movies, the Illusionist or
the Prestige.
The Prestige. I think I saw it on, I think you sent me the link, but I saw it in the theater and it looked great. Yeah. It looked like, wow, this is really cool. And there's another one, Christian Bale's in every one of his movies these days. So, but it looked really cool. I thought it was effective. And
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that'll be a good movie. Oh, this, do you see that Halo got a director?
Yeah, and it was like, well, you know, they
the look on your face, I think, is the look everyone had when they saw this story.
It was like, what? And to their credit, the people that were pushing it were saying, okay, I know what you're thinking. And they sent these links.
Because the director is no one anybody's ever heard of. He's a South African
commercial director.
Yeah.
But he's done, he's done these arty, you know, these arty short films that look incredible. But of course, everybody's hitting the link at the same time, so you couldn't download the damn thing. So I'll have to take their word for it. But it was like, God, Halo, Peter Jackson, they sold it, this and that, and then this nobody.
Well, we'll have to see how much Peter Jackson dictates things anyway. If he wants to be involved, you know, is it going to be like a V for Vendetta, where you've got the the Wachowski siblings, I should say.
Yeah.
You know, maybe their vision is overriding. Was it James McTeague?
Yeah, that's exactly.
And maybe not. You know, I don't know if he, I don't know how much he was actually the director of that film. I think quite a bit, but still.
Well, David Fincher was in that position once, and he's like an incredible director. And he was hired on to projects where people are going, huh? Who is this guy? And now you see as a vision.
You know, and so you don't want to prejudge, but you know, you don't really have any track record to say, I trust that this guy can make a big movie, or wow, that director will bring a unique vision. Like, you know, every Terry Gilliam film has a certain vibe to it, or Paul Greengrass now has a very, and maybe he, you know, maybe that's just the way it's gone, and not every Paul Greengrass movie is going to look
that staccato,
authentic or that shaky camera thing. But
you know, like so many people, I'm on the PC and I am like 3 years behind in the whole Halo world because Halo wasn't ported to the PC till about 2 years ago, and Halo 2 apparently isn't going to get there.
Yeah, it's coming. It'll be for Vista.
Yeah, I know, but apparently it's done, but it's going to be for Vista. So we're sitting here stuck with, great, we're going to get for Vista a game that is 3 years old at this point, 2 years old. But I'm still looking forward to it because from everybody I've talked to, it's completely the equivalent of Half-Life 2, which is the greatest PC game of all time. So I'm looking forward to it, but I'm sort of out of the thing.
I loved the Halo games because I, for some reason, never got into Doom, never got into Unreal Tournament or the other shooters.
Yep.
This was the first first-person shooter that I played extensively and was good at.
Yeah.
Not super good, not like I can dominate people or pwn them, if you will, but good enough. I finished both games and I was going through on the harder difficulty levels and really and just enjoyable for me because I felt like I didn't suck at it.
Yeah,
which for previous games I always felt like I give up.
You know, what's interesting is I've done this before, but the Half-Life 2 was to me the greatest game of all time. And Steam, you know, it's Valve, this Bellevue developer, and they release now they're releasing everything totally on their server. You can't even buy them and in the stores. And what they're doing is they're releasing their games now episodically. So they're doing like 5 to 6 hour versions for $20, which is interesting. It's like a third of a game. And I loved it. But anyway, so after I played it, then you go back and then they can play it with a commentary track. Have you ever seen that before?
No, not for
so,
a game.
So you're going through the game, and at various points, you can point your cursor at this little balloon that's got a question mark on it. And then the developer tells you what they're trying to do here and why this didn't work and this worked and what they're going.
It was the
most incredible thing I'd ever seen. It was like, oh my God, I had no idea how much thought went into why this monster came out here, what was going there, what was going on in my mind, because they're figuring, oh, you're going to glance to the right here. I mean, it was incredible. It totally illuminated
the game making
process.
I wonder if the graphics cards in the Mac Pro laptops are beefy enough to handle some of these games now that you can run some Windows stuff on them.
Well, you know what is most of the games like that are run by Valve and stuff, they're set up to degrade extremely well. So you can actually run them on, I kid you not, you can run them on an, you of course want them the greatest and best everything.
I prefer to have the best, but so I'll have to poke around in that and see if the MacBook,
you know, my dad got a new Mac and we put Parallels on it and Windows on it, and it works. It works pretty well, but there's some games that don't work, but it's mostly because my dad is buying these cheesy old, I mean, literally games designed for Windows 95. So I think there's something goofy.
Yeah,
there.
But the next Intel processor,
yeah,
the Core 2 Duo,
will cover all that.
I don't actually know what's in the current Mac Pro laptop,
yep,
but I know that it's not the very latest chip, and apparently that's supposed to come out in September.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's, I wonder how much a better processor offloads the work from the graphics. I don't know, but that's that my next computer is probably going to be the next generation of the Mac Pro laptop. And I wonder, I'm hoping
mine will almost certainly be the next generation of the Mac Mini, because I want to create a center and I want to be able to put, put Windows on it.
So, I got a 360, Xbox 360 last week.
Yeah.
That, whole, very well done, because you plug it in, and it just, you don't have to read the instruction book, really. It's, you know, it's got a good UI. That whole dashboard with the blades thing, I think, works really well.
And I saw you playing a game that I have on my pocket PC with similar graphics.
I don't have an HD TV yet.
But you won't get a game. You're going to wait till you get an HD TV to get a super game?
No, I've got a game. I've got Chrome Hounds.
So you can't play it on...
It does the same thing as what you were just talking about. It degrades. It's not the graphics just aren't as nice as if I had an HD TV.
Yeah.
It still looks pretty good. It looks better than I thought it would.
Yeah.
But for various reasons, I'm still holding off on an HD TV maybe till October now, which is meh. But
well, they only get cheaper. October's a good time because there'll be a lot of sales.
Yeah, but and anyway, it's pretty well done. We used it as a DVD player. You came over and we watched Inside Man the other night.
Yeah.
And aside from the fact you're using, because I don't have the remote for it, I have the controller.
Yeah, that worked pretty good. You just figured it out pretty intuitively.
Excuse me. It wasn't quite as quick to rewind to hear a line over again.
Yeah.
But just the same, I've already moved my older DVD player down into the lower half of my house, so that this Xbox 360 is now my main DVD player, because it's got the digital optical out for the audio, which is nice. And I don't know if it's a progressive scan DVD player, but since
almost certainly is, because
probably. But my existing one, I don't think was, because it was a first generation Sony that I paid a lot of money for.
It's funny now, because you can for $20 you get a. They don't even think they make other ones anymore.
I know.
Did you hear that the first Blu-ray?
I know where you're going.
People are buying them, putting their PC, announcing
the PC drives, the Blu-ray drives that you can put in a PC can't play the movies yet.
What? Well, they're implying that they're never going to, first ones, but...
Actually, that's not what I heard.
Is it going to be a firmware upgrade?
It's a DRM thing, which is ironic, because Sony's one of the people creating the DRM problems. But apparently, it's a firmware upgrade that will later be able to enable these to play the movies. But the only thing you can do with these drives right now is look at discs you've already burned.
Exactly. It's insanity. You know, I and again, I know I've said this like a couple times before, but I'm dumbfounded that they spent 2 years saying, you know what, we're not ready to pull the trigger because we want it, because we have a technology. And I don't understand how in those 2 years they didn't just keep making them better and better. It's as if they've released everything like a year too early because they hadn't thought it through, not 2 years after supposedly they were ready.
And there's been a fair amount of HD DVD versus Blu-ray stuff in the areas I've been surfing lately and things I've been hearing about. Like I went into a Magnolia audio video a couple weeks ago to talk to a guy about projectors. And I was asking him about his Blu-ray HDVD thoughts. And he said his HDVD player was in the shop. It had already broken, was being fixed.
Oh, so he's like a first generation Toshiba or something.
I think those are the only ones out. And he said he was much more in the Blu-ray camp because it's more than what, you know, it's different companies will be producing the players instead of just Toshiba producing HDVD players.
I totally hear him on that.
He thinks the quality is good, although every comparison I've seen of the movies so far gives the edge to HD DVD.
Really?
And partly because there was a bug in some of the early Blu-ray players where there was some like sharpening or there was some picture setting which came out defaulted wrong. And so the picture quality wasn't as good. It's just very interesting to see the different sides of the argument and people saying that a lot of, you know, their HDVD HD, DVD has the edge now with more movies, but Blu-ray's catching up. But actually, if you look at the release charts for the next couple of months, HD, DVD continues to have the edge there.
Yeah.
You know, somebody saying, yes, Blu-ray's second layer stuff hasn't made it out of the lab yet, but the HD, DVD people are saying you don't need that much space, and Blu-ray saying, well, how can you say that? How can you... You always end up using the space you have. Although you start thinking about it, and really for movies, there gets to be a point. How much space can you really use on a disc? How many different interactive features? How many commentaries can you have?
If you even encode the movie at the maximum bit width, which is no reason to at a certain point, it still doesn't fill it up.
How many visual things can you possibly stick on a disc, honestly?
Yeah, the only thing you're talking about is extras like behind the scenes, and they're honestly probably going to get to the point where they're releasing, like, here's a live running video of a day in the life of a set where we didn't turn the camera off, or just, I mean, because so you can surf through. I mean, it's like literally an embarrassment of riches, but I agree with their point. People can't visualize what they're going to fill it up with, but the first time you had hard disks and gigabytes,
but the analogy doesn't directly cross over because it's computers. Yeah. When you're talking about computer storage, you will always fill that up. Always. But when you're talking about a specific format like a disc, a DVD, I mean, yes, there's more things you can do, but there has to be a point where it's too much. Nobody's going to watch five documentaries except freaks like us.
I think what the thinking would be is nobody's going to watch them, but if they're there, it's like an added bonus for the ones that do. But then again, it's like self-defeating because it's never cheap to do that. And the more stuff you put on there, it just costs them more money with very little return. So I agree totally. It's like, there's gotta be a limit to some extent.
You know, I'm kind of leaning towards hoping HD DVD wins just because they're going to come out with the add-on drive for the Xbox 360 and suddenly, and probably for 200, I think people are guessing $200.
Yeah.
Because they said the whole solution, Xbox and the add-on drive, is going to be cheaper than buying a standalone player.
$400, right? Is that what they're shooting for?
So, well, I don't know.
Or I've always been partial to HD DVD, and I was sitting back thinking, I'm going, why did I initially always decide I liked that one? I honestly have no idea.
I think it's probably a knee-jerk anti-Sony's format.
You know, you're right. That's exactly
because
where it comes from.
You and I are conditioned to be like, God dang it, Sony, stop trying to push memory stick on people. Stop trying to push this. Yeah. Just, go with the standard, you jackasses. Even though somebody pointed out, everyone thinks of Blu-ray as Sony's thing, but they're one part of a consortium. It's really not, Sony's not the only one, but they're the highest.
Yeah, the biggest
dog. But everyone, including me and you, just sort of associate it directly with Sony. And we don't say Samsung is as involved when they are.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting aspect to it. The war continues. The format war continues. Mm-hmm. And it continues to be irritating.
I know.
And, you know, there's also more articles coming out portending, you know, no one's going to buy the PS3 or everyone's going to buy the PS3.
It's like they have any idea what they're talking about. First of all, the idea that nobody's going to buy it is insanity. You know, of course they're going to buy it. And somebody else pointed out, you know, at the very worst, for whatever reason, American systems and anything don't do well in Japan. And this thing's going to be enormous in Japan. Enormous. It's going to be huge. So it's got
probably, although it's big. It's a big unit.
Really?
I think I saw a picture of one of the Sony execs holding one up. And you never got a sense of scale when it's a picture standing alone. But when you see someone holding one, it's bigger than a 360. It might even be bigger than an original Xbox. And a lot of people were saying that's one of the reasons the Xbox didn't do well in Japan was because it was huge.
Huh.
And Japanese living room, so to speak, can be fairly small.
I wonder how loud the unit's going to be because that's been the big knock with the Xbox 360.
It's loud when you're playing a disc game.
Yeah.
But when you're watching a because I was concerned about that watching the DVD, but it ended up not being overly loud for watching a DVD or playing stuff off the hard drive.
Yeah, but I wonder what the Sony is if they have them. Because, different chips.
It's got a 9, it's got like 9-core cell yeah. processor that's got to generate some heat.
But that those new Intel chips, they're pointing out that they hardly even need a fan. So depending on
I don't know that the new Mac desktops that use those yep. new Intel chips, the heat sinks are huge.
No, I'm talking about on the PC end, at least they're using them. They're pointing out that they don't even heat up hardly.
Same, supposed to be the same chips.
Yeah. Well, maybe it's because they're using a huge.
Or, I mean, the last Mac desktop had 9 fans, so maybe yeah. they're using the heat sinks to reduce the fan count.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, did you hear that? Do you see the Steve Jobs thing and hear some of the coverage of his the latest developers conference announcement?
Everyone's saying the most boring keynote ever.
Well, and some people are because saying
it's that, they introduced the new Mac desktop. So yep. And the big deal was finally every Mac now is on an Intel chip.
Yep.
They're pretty nice desktops. They dropped the price of the screens.
Yeah, by $1,000.
But it's still quite a lot.
A lot, but it's simply the best screen in the world. So for PCs, or for Macs, for PCs, for anything.
They also did a lot of previewing of the next OS Leopard features.
They did a lot of Microsoft bashing, which was pretty stunning.
I hadn't heard much about that. They're like saying, welcome to Vista 2.0.
Well, a couple of the people I was hearing, like on Cranky Geeks or whatever, they were saying that, they've heard a lot of this. This one gal was saying, I've been to every one of these. Never have I seen them go after Microsoft to the extent they did here. It was a little weird.
Why.
I don't know. It's I think maybe a little bit they're selling their wild oats.
I'm a huge Apple fan, but I used to love it when they did that. And now yeah. I'm to the point like, just
it sounds defensive almost.
You don't need to.
I know your program is better. It's like, why do it? And it will be better than
And now
Vista.
More than ever, you don't need to look like a spoiled brat.
A couple reviewers said that Steve Jobs looked gaunt. And looked tired, and they were inferring that maybe there's something going on with the cancer he had or something. But
could be. But and then I've seen a lot of people. I've seen more than one person say that they're holding back, that they purposefully did not display some things they wanted to because they didn't want to cannibalize sales. If people saw what was coming down the pike, they would stop buying now and wait for this new stuff to come out. And whether that's a lot of people are expecting the new chips to go into the next revision of the laptop in the fall. So that's probably a month or two away. Everyone, we've been waiting for years now for the Mini to become the true living room box with the DVR software. So that might be coming down the pike. The latest generation of the iPod, I think the Nano, who knows if there's going to be, the touchless wheel.
Yeah, iPod. The full video iPod is what they're talking about.
And so, all these various things, is there going to be an iPod phone? And it's funny, certain tech outlets are saying, yes, it's going to happen. Certain other tech outlets are saying, it'll never happen. Why would Apple want to get into the phone business? Because now you're beholden to the carriers, which is almost as bad as being beholden to the music labels.
Yeah, it's a big waste of time.
And
the only benefit to it is for consumers that don't want to hold.
And there is, if Apple does a phone, I'm actually to the point I'm like a month or, well, I think I can, I don't know if it was August or October that I can upgrade my phone. But I have no desire for the rocker from Motorola just because of that stupid 100-song limit.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And it's so poorly implemented in about a million other ways too.
But if I had complete iPod functionality and it made phone calls, I would probably get it.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't want, if it's crippled in one way or the other, no.
Yeah.
Granted, I don't need my phone to do a lot. It just needs to make calls. I don't need it to take videos. I don't need it to.
Well, I don't need to do anything but make calls. But I do walk around with a pocket PC and an iPod sometimes and a phone. If they were all in the same thing, I'd be happy.
Clearly, it'll eventually happen. But so far the implementations, the Trios are supposed to be a pretty good implementation of a phone and a pocket PC.
Yeah, I was looking to get a smartphone at one point. It killed me one time because they had a smartphone and I was looking online and there was, it was like one of the phone companies was offering a deal and it was a pocket PC. I guess they're trying to get them out of stock and it was a pocket PC. And it was it was like a $500 one with a pocket PC with the built-in phone, and they're selling it for $100. It was like on Amazon, and I tried to sign up for it immediately, and I couldn't do it because I have an existing account but they wouldn't let you because you had to sign up. It was like signing up with a new one. And I kept dialing, and then the offer was rescinded. Clearly, it was like something they released for like a minute that did it. And then the next day, I called up and said, I'm trying to get this thing. And they go, well, you couldn't do that because you have this. And in actuality, you could have done this, but it just couldn't be done online. And I go, well, great. So give me the thing. Well, no, actually, that offer is rescinded. So in other words, I didn't get the perfect phone for the unbelievably cheap price. It made me so mad.
Yeah, poor... You say I hear you talking about smartphone and pocket PC, and it's Microsoft's plethora of products coming back to bite them in the butt. Where they've got most consumers don't know the difference between smartphone and pocket PC.
Yeah.
I can barely explain the difference, and I'm a nerd. I bet you can barely.
Well, this was mobile. This was it was actually the new version. It was a pocket PC software that incorporated the phone. It wasn't the pocket PC software devoted. to the phone. Well,
Microsoft's got it right now, or it's just Windows Mobile software. Yeah,
that's what it was. It was the first generation of that.
Because they're on 5.0 now, Windows Mobile 5.0, and they're getting away from the pocket PC and the smartphone designations, which is good, because people don't know what the hell they mean.
Yeah.
All right, I think we've been rambling for quite a while.
Yeah, we're right about the right time.
I'm trying to think of what's coming down the pike. Suddenly we're out of the stage of there's something new every week you have to see. I know,
the big summer movies.
But
Borat's coming out like literally in like a week or two.
Really? That quick?
Isn't it August? I thought it was August it was coming out.
So Borat's coming out.
I can't begin to describe
The Prestige, I think, is pretty close. Yeah,
The Prestige looks pretty good.
There's some other fall movies I'm excited about. But, you know, I'm starting to think more like you. Like, well, do I really need to see this in a theater? Is this a theater experience? Is this a I need to see it now experience, or is this a I can wait till I buy the DVD?
I know.
More and more finding the theater going experience unpleasant.
Yep.
I haven't had nothing specific the past few times. Just.
Well, and it's kind of, to me, it's morphed into the whole the TiVo iPod world of.
Well, for me, it's become just the trouble.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you get there and you're like, God, bargain is now $750.
Yep.
And just the trouble of going to all, you know, and. Do I need to see it now?
Well,
trying to combine it with like friends. It's like, oh, well, I can see this right now, but does my wife want to see it?
Yeah, or at this time.
Or do you want to see it? Or does John want to see it?
Yeah.
How much of an effort do I want to put in making sure everybody has an opportunity to see it versus just saying, you know what? I'm going to see this movie at 5:00. If you want to join me, here's where I'll be, which I have found is the best way to do a bunch of friends seeing a movie instead of going around with, you know, 30 emails of, well, I can't see the 5:10. Can we see the 6:00? Oh, well, I've already seen that. Can we? And you just, it devolves into this cluster. And well, I find the best way to do it is just, here's where I'm going to be. If you want to see it, join me.
Well, for me, having watched, like, I think I told you last year, I got like the first Arrested Development on DVD, having pointedly said, you know, I don't have time to figure out when this thing's on and watch the thing. And watching DVD, I enjoyed it so much more that I find that everything is like that.
You now want, you're an on-demand consumer now.
And so I've morphed that to the movie-going experience. I'm willing to go, you know, I can hear everybody talk about it, I can get excited, but I'm willing to just, for the most part, put that excitement off and go and watch it 3 months later when it comes out in DVD.
Yeah, I find it's more convenience now. It's like, I don't need to see Borat in a theater experience, but... If it's playing and I've got the time, I will probably see it there.
I'll almost definitely see it in the theater for two reasons. One, because like some movies, I'm so fantastically excited about it that it will be hard for me to wait for it. And two, because I know the movie is going to be a whole lot funnier for me if I'm forced to watch it. That's definitely going to be a cringe inducing movie. And for me, I sit there and I pause them. I watch it. It takes me a month to go through them because it's so painful. But if I'm forced to sit through it, I know I'm going to be laughing a million times harder. So that one in particular, I'm almost certainly going to see in the theater. And plus, seeing a movie like that in the theater, it's one of the rare experiences where, you know, people are going to be rolling in the aisles. And that kind of is something that's not totally replicable in your house.
No, and that's, you know, that's the whole push about the theater going experience and why you should watch them in the theaters. But, you know, more and more, I'm finding that experience unpleasant.
Yeah.
Because of jackasses that won't stop talking, because of people doing stuff with their cell phones, and now the screens are so big that it's genuinely distracting.
Yeah.
When I was in Ohio last week, we went to this amusement park called Cedar Point.
That's the big amusement park. Which was
one of the only good things about Ohio. I'm sorry. But nice. It's a park with a ton of roller coasters, and they're one of these parks that's always competing for the world's records, yep. The fastest, the best, the tallest, whatever.
Longest so they've got wooden roller coaster.
A ton of great coasters. Anyway, we go to this, and we go on one of their crappier rides, Disaster Transport, which used to be a bobsled ride.
Yeah.
Like it was a bobsled track, and the car was a bobsled, basically. And it was perfectly fine then. But then they redressed it.
Yeah.
And they enclosed all the track, and now it's like a space ride. And they very clearly were trying to ape Star Tours in the presentation, where as you're waiting in line, it's this whole thing where there's robots and there's a storyline they're trying to present that was horrible.
Oh, man.
So poorly done compared to Star Tours. And now they've completely redone the inside, so now it's all UV lighting and wacky paint.
Ugh.
But the ride itself is now horrible. Yeah. It's completely pointless. It's a horrible ride. But the kid in front of the car was like trying to videotape it with his cell phone. So he's holding it up. So there's this big bright screen.
Yeah.
That's just distracting me through this horrible ride. And it reminded me of sitting in a movie and I just wanted to smack the kid.
I know. That's why you sit there and see those ads in front of movies where they talk about turn off your phone. And I think what they need to do is have an ad where they're showing a screen. It's like in a movie theater and the camera's in the back. And then all of a sudden you see a whole bunch of these goddamn bright screens up, and then somebody screams at everybody, says, yeah, don't even check your phone for messages. Don't check whatever, because it talking on the phone is bad enough, but seeing these screens light up,
yeah.
you're watching a movie and all of a sudden it's like the sun is over in the corner of your eye. Don't do it. What are people thinking? It's unbelievable. And you'll see these people and they'll be rhythmically checking their phones like every 30 seconds for the entire movie. What is going on in their minds? Anyway, I'm really a cranky old person.
Well, you know, more and more of that just destroys the movie-going experience.
Yeah.
All right. I think we're done.
We are.
There were no listener emails to discuss this week.
Oh.
Now that we've got that, now that it bounces to my Gmail account, then I can check those fairly regularly. All right. Well.
But if people do want emails, how do they get a hold of us?
You guys rock. At mustardayonnaise.com. That's the preferred method.
Exactly.
That's the only method, quite literally.
You could send us
if you knew our personal
through our window.
If you knew our personal email accounts, you could email us that way, but we're certainly not going to tell you what they are here.
Absolutely not.
We need to get that art done.
Okay, I do need to get the art done.
I tell you what, I will do something.
Yeah, that's true.
And then you'll look at it and you'll go, I could do something so much better. And I'll be like, you've had months, dude.
Yes, okay. I will commit to getting it done.
I finally got the problem fixed, so the last two episodes were available.
So I need to make a little, like, 150
by 150.
And then a smaller version, too, right?
I don't know if it scales the big one down or not.
Okay.
But I've been...
I will put together a 150 pixel square image.
And then we can let all our friends and family know.
They can find it on.
And then
iTunes.
We can increase our listenership by threefold at least.
I know. My mom has indicated she would be willing to sign up. Although it's amazing. Whenever I suggest it to people I know of iTunes, they go, oh, I should let my brother know about that. And I go, well, what about you? I was mentioning you might be interested.
But the problem I have found is you tell them how to subscribe to a feed through iTunes.
That's too confusing for
and
them.
They don't know how to do it. Unless they can go to the iTunes store, it seems like, and find it that way.
Yeah. So I need to make a so
we need
a
to do that and then album. Yeah, then we can do that and we're all good. And then people can listen to this and wonder, why the hell should I listen to this every week? What is this bringing to my life?
Yeah, no, I agree.
And my little tagline is it's movie commentaries from two guys who have seen The Big Lebowski hundreds of times from the perspective of two guys who have seen The Big Lebowski hundreds of times.
This is true. Not about The Big Lebowski pretty much in any way, but clearly from that perspective.
Yes.
This is true. That really does narrow cast us down in a beautiful way.
I find that's a pretty good little elevator pitch.
Absolutely.
All right. So you guys rock at mustardayonnaise.com. I am Matt.
I am Richard.
Thank you for listening.
Adios. We'll be right back.